So maybe we should start by talking a bit about wild places, because Jen, you introduced the notion of wild places sort of on the edge of towns and cities. Claire, I think your location sounds very much like a wild place in the truest sense of the word. I'm very much drawn to the kind of wild places that Jen was talking about, and also specifically to abandoned buildings, which you find in those places. So maybe, Jen, you could start and talk a bit about the attraction of wildernesses.
I think dramatically they're quite interesting because they are the sorts of places where people get up to no good, which most of my characters tend to do if I leave them alone for long enough. I wanted to write about Preston, and not Preston as it is today. Now it's a city, and it's had a little bit of money pumped into tarting up the town centre. But the Preston that I lived in when I was 14, these characters aren't me, but they lived in the Preston that I lived in. They got up to no good the same way as I did when I was 14. And I remember, a lot of it comes from my own memories and my own experiences of them. You know, when you're 14, perhaps you're not allowed to go into a pub, you're not allowed to go to a nightclub. What you are allowed to do is go to the docks and drink. You're allowed to go to the park and drink. You're allowed to go to the train station and try and buy fags and drink. So I was writing about places, I suppose, where teenagers would be. It just happened that they were fairly grotty places most of the time.
Yeah.
I was also very interested in parks and nature reserves because that, as I was growing up, was what stood for countryside in my experience, that a nature reserve isn't countryside at all. It's got paths, it's got red bins for the dog poo. It's very, very man-made and ordered. And I wanted to have these scenes where the violence erupts be in these quite pretend wild places.
And yet you lived so close to countryside. It's real countryside.
Yeah, but we never went. We went to Blackpool.
Went the other way.
Yeah, my first book is set in Fleetwood, so I kind of like dodgy seaside towns.
Right. Claire, have you always written about wildernesses?
Yeah, well, yes, I suppose so. First adult novel was based in Greenland, the northwest coast of Greenland, and I went up there. I suppose it's an excuse for me to go there, to these places as research, so it's a sort of ulterior motive really in choosing these way out places, because I like going there on my own. But I think places like Fleetwood and Preston and places like that, they've got their a charm, I think, because they're kind of formed and then they've decayed, and there's kind of a potential there. You can use your imagination to develop them. They're not sort of already there for you and everything's presented to you, but you can interact with them more. I like places like that as well. So, and also, but in this last book that I've written, it's a story about man against the environment, and the environment is a kind of character in itself, I think, like you said, Jen, earlier in the room, contacted each other, that it's something that you have to fight against, and it can be hot and it can be cold and it can be lethal. And so I think I like that about landscape as well. So it's all those things, really.
Yeah, I like what you say about the wild places maybe there being something about them that inspires the imagination, that makes you... I mean, I find if I go into somewhere like, for instance, the abandoned Cheadle Bleach Works next door to Barnes Hospital in Cheadle, either of those places, in fact, you go in and it's as if the story's waiting to happen, as if story is some kind of sort of fungoid substance that might be lying around the place, just waiting to be stirred up by walking through. Now, you mentioned, Claire, about going to Greenland, and I mean, that is very important for me when I'm writing about a place. I've got to go there. And the only time I wrote about a specific place and hadn't been there was I did a story called Iceland, And I've never been to Iceland. I did go to the frozen food store to carry out that small part of research, because there was also a scene in the story set in the frozen food store. But I didn't go to the real Iceland. And as a result, I believe, of that, the story was not very good. And I wished I hadn't written it, and I especially wished I'd not allowed it to be published, but it was. And there's nothing you can do about that. But I think you have to go there. You had to go to Greenland, and you say it's like an excuse to go there, and maybe it is, but it's a method that really works for me, and it sounds like it really works for you.
Yeah, I would say so. I think there was a famous book quite recently, the person who'd written it hadn't gone to the place where it was set, and there's a bit of a controversy about that. And I think it depends on the sort of book that you write, because if a book is a book that's where it's plot driven, the setting needn't be such an important aspect. But in more kind of, well, literary works where it's more character driven, I think it's more important. And I found interesting things by going to a place that I'd never have realised by not going. For instance, in Greenland, I was a bit worried about getting lost, that I'd wander away from the very small settlements, and I found that I wouldn't do, because round each settlement there was this pack of dogs, and periodically they'd howl, and there's this howling sound that really coloured for me Greenland, and I'd never have realised that without going there, so I wouldn't have got lost because I could hear these dogs going back there. But I think the sight, the sounds, and all of the senses are important, and you get those by going to a place, by experiencing it.
Definitely. Packs of dogs, does that bring back Preston?
I was just thinking about the places that I write about are always very near to where I live, and it's possibly because I'm fairly lazy and don't like to do too much research. I visited Fleetwood a lot when I was writing A Kind of Intimacy. There's no train station in Fleetwood, so it involved getting on a bus called the Filed Villager, with a pram and a very angry toddler who didn't like being taken to Fleetwood. And there's nowhere to change a baby in Fleetwood. I kind of wander around and drink cups of tea and look longingly through pub windows and then go home again. I was interested in what you said about there being perhaps setting isn't as important for a plot-driven novel. And I'm not sure I agree with you. I think my books, I want them to be very plotty, I want them to be quite gripping and thrilling. Yeah. And setting has always been very important to me, because it dictates who my characters are, and from the characters comes the plot.
Yeah.
So my characters are generally quite disappointed, quite sheltered people. They are not in any way cosmopolitan, and they come from Preston, they come from Fleetwood, they come from Chorley in book three. So and my books couldn't be anywhere other than where they are, despite the fact that they are quite plotted things. So for me it works the other way around.
For me too, actually. I did a book called Antwerp, and made several trips to Antwerp. Would have felt to me like cheating if I hadn't. But not only that, by going there and by spending a lot of time there, walking for miles and miles and miles, walking all day long, I feel I discover more of a place. And I think that story sort of starts to emerge. The more intimate you become with a place, the more buildings you break into, the more people you meet, the more dogs you hear howling. Like Jen, for me, plot is as important, but I find that it tends to come from the place. Mm. I can see what you're saying as well, that a place needn't necessarily suggest a plot. It can just suggest a mood or an atmosphere, and that can lead to a beautiful scene, a great piece of writing. Have some of your books been more plot driven? And has that tended to come from the place?
They've been tied up with the two, really.
Where else have you explored apart from Greenland?
And
Patagonia.
Patagonia, Frankfurt, China. I think that's about it.
I wonder if the the book you were thinking of, about the person who'd never been there, was Sid Smith wrote a trilogy set in China. But he made no secret of the fact that he'd never set foot in China.
Yeah.
And it did very well. It won awards. It's beautifully written. But he's never been there. Yeah. And that makes me not want to read it.
Mm,
I'd rather read something.
That'd bother me at all.
Wouldn't it?
No.
That's great.
No, I don't. I mean, if it was good, if it interested me, I'm not, when I read a book, I'm not really checking kind of if the facts are right,
mm-hmm.
because I accept that, you know, it's fiction, it's okay, it doesn't bother me too much.
Mm.
What about an idea that was mentioned earlier, the idea of setting as character? To what extent can a setting be, how can you think of it as character? Do you believe that it is? Can it be?
Yeah, just as foe in my books, really. Just it's inhospitable. It can be, it can change. It can be sly. It's got sort of human characteristics in a way. If you've got one that's quite ferocious and alien, I suppose in today's life in the Western civilization, it doesn't matter so much about what's going on outside. We can spend all day inside, so it doesn't matter. But I think if you go to a place where there's nothing, it's just you, then it's going to be important, and it's going to have more of a character because you're more dependent upon it.
Do you always explore alone? You said you like...
Yeah, I think I find it better to explore alone because you're not distracted, because when you're with somebody, you've always got to talk to them. And also, I find that people come on to you more if you're on your own. You know, you can talk to strangers more. Whereas I think if you're with somebody, you tend to talk to them, so you wouldn't talk to strangers. So it's good like that.
Jen, you're always accompanied by a toddler, I believe, or possibly two now.
A six-year-old and a tiny baby.
Time flies.
So I can only... research near me, I think, or get train tickets. I'm the Chorley book that I'm working on now. One of the characters has spent a bit of time in Salt Lake City, and I'm coming round to the idea. You're convincing me, really, that I may
need to go.
I need to go.
Yeah.
I've kind of looked at a lot of pictures, but it's not going to be the same, is it?
No, that's something that somebody told me, that they'd read this particular book that they'd famously not gone to where it was. And this friend of mine said to me that she thought that it was very filmic, that there was it was mainly what the person, what this, you saw, rather than what all the other senses is going. So I can see how that's good, but also not good.
I suppose I'd be worried going to a place in order to research it. I would always feel like a tourist and like I had my notebook in my hand.
Mm.
Whereas because I write about places that I've lived, I feel that I write from the inside. And I'm not sure if that shows in my writing or if it's important to anyone other than me.
Yeah.
I feel I'm... And especially because the places that I write about, Fleetwood and Preston and Chorley, people don't tend to write about them. And I like that. I like how it feels quite cheeky to me that I'm not supposed to be doing this. I should write about somewhere a bit more glamorous, maybe.
Has either of you ever experienced any pitfalls writing about real places?
I have.
Yeah?
I have had to, with Cold Light... I wanted to write about Preston, but Preston wasn't quite serving my purposes, so I've moved the shopping centre and I've condensed a journey that it wouldn't be possible to walk the way that one of these characters does. And I've changed that. I've done a bit of violence to Preston's geography for the sake of my novel. And because I do a fair bit of events and teaching in Preston, I'm sure that some of the people around me too are going to read this book will be annoyed by it.
So you've not had any complaints yet?
Not so far, no. I think I've had a few Fleetwooders have been unhappy because Fleetwood is not portrayed very positively in a kind of intimacy, but that's okay.
Yeah. Claire, have you, anything gone badly wrong?
Gone badly wrong, but there's been sort of handicaps, like when I was basing a book in 19th century Frankfurt, I got there and found that actually Frankfurt's pretty fake at the moment because it was blitzed and everything was bombed, and although the buildings look old, they're actually not. They're kind of concrete at the back and just spacious. So there has been that pitfall, but apart from that, no.
And you change places, like Jen has changed the geography of Preston?
No, but I didn't, because a lot of it is, imagined to some extent, but you know, if I went to a place like Patagonia, because it's just a wilderness, you don't have to invent or change anything, because it's kind of, there's not a specific street that's there. Mm. It's just a blade of grass, so it doesn't really matter. I don't think you get the same sort of, you know, problems like that with a wild place.
Do you think there's a difference between depicting a place and genuinely evoking a place? And is it important to make that distinction?
Yeah, I think evoking a place involves the emotions of the characters as well, and depicting it is just, for me anyway, is just like a straight description. But I think evoking's more economical, because you're doing two things at once. You've got the emotions of the characters and you've got the place, so that's good, I think, to evoke rather than depict.
Jen?
I think I would agree, and I think it's okay to lie about where the shopping centre is if I am just trying to evoke an atmosphere. If I'm trying to, write a tour guide or draw a map, then obviously that would be a bad idea. But that's not what I'm trying to do.
What do you think of books with maps in them? Would you consider putting a map of Chorley in book number 3 at the front?
Yeah, I quite like the idea of that. Yeah.
Okay.
But it was my favourite bit of the Lord of the Rings book.
Was it?
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. The Lord of the Rings was too long for me. The Hobbit was okay.
Stephen King does it as well.
Yes, he does.
Under the Dome.
Yeah. That's too long. That's what a long book. Why do books have to be that long? Let's have more short books, please. Buy short books. And let's write short books. Do you write short books?
No. Not really.
Yours are sort of medium length.
They're about 100,000 words.
That's long.
Is that long?
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was about middling.
What do we like, people? Short books, long books? Short. Short. Oh, yes.
Come on, you've got to
cut
down.
I know, cut down.
let's involve the audience. Let's hope that you're bursting with... we've got a question already, yes.
You're talking about visiting places and not visiting places. I was thinking perhaps the advantage of visiting, if you're setting a story at a place that is in the present, then there's a clear advantage to go there, because you might discover a particular detail or quirk you would never have ever found out in the Beguiled, perhaps. But interesting about Frankfurt, if the city is long gone, the place is long gone, is there then any advantage to going there? Is it all online research, libraries, the same as someone in Frankfurt, who lives in Frankfurt, would have to do the same? Just not there anymore.
Mm. Good question.
Yeah, I was a bit worried when I discovered how much it had been changed. But there are things like, there's the museums in Frankfurt that have got the models of old Frankfurt. And the weird thing is that with my novel that was set there, it was set in an asylum in Frankfurt, a mental asylum in Frankfurt. And I went to the street, and it was quite strange. I got a really strong impression of the place, even though the buildings had changed. The actual street was where it was. And there was this really weird feeling, because it went from a very busy street through a kind of narrow opening into the quiet of this other street. And I really got a strong impression of place, even though everything had changed. I think the location and the character of the location is kept the same. So that's my defence for that bit.
That's very interesting, actually. And I find that with my interest in abandoned buildings, you feel like you're going back into the past. I tend not to do period settings very much, but at the same time, I do tend to sort of hark back to maybe a period, maybe 15, 20 years earlier. That's very often important in my stuff. When I've finished the novel that I'm writing now, the next one is going to focus a lot on places that were important to me in Manchester when I was growing up. And those places still exist. And I've already started researching this book by going and having looking again at these places, but they're changed. So there's a pond very near the airport, right next to the airport perimeter fence where I used to go fishing. And I've been back many times since, but there was a gap of maybe 10 or 15 years between me as a child and me going back as an adult. And when I went back for the first time as an adult, it was almost heartbreaking because the pond had completely weeded up. It was unfishable, and it was most likely there were no fish in there anymore. And even if there were, you wouldn't be able to fish for them. And it's being completely colonised by weed. It felt like this amazing metaphor for the way that the past is unreachable. There's another pond that I went to and fished in once, which is accessible. I didn't know this at the time as a child, as a teenager, but I've since discovered that it's an entirely private pond because it's accessible only from the back gardens of a number of houses that circle it in Timperley. And so I went down there and tried to sort of peer over people's fences and so on. You can't actually see it from the road, so I started knocking on doors. And I struck lucky. The first door I knocked on, that this nice elderly couple invited me in and said, come on in, because they liked my story. I mean, it could have not worked for it. You know, they might have heard my story and thought, no thanks, shut the door, we're not having any of that. But they invited me in, they took me down to the bottom of their garden, and there was the pond. And inevitably, it was smaller than I remembered, as these things tend to be. But it was some of that magic came back to me. And I'd never known what the pond was called, or indeed if it had a name. And I asked them, and the guy said, yes, it's called Zulu Pond. Oh. I said, why? Why is it called Zulu Pond? And he said, because Zulu is my favourite film. And I thought, okay, that's his name for it. And so that'll be the name that I give it in the book. And I'll probably have to explain the reason why. I'm trying to answer the question in a way, but the past, I find that the past clings on somehow, it's still there. But then I'm not writing about a past as far back as maybe the one Claire was writing about in Frankfurt. Jen, what about you?
I tend to write about now. The Preston of Cold Light is 1997, 1998. And because my characters are 14 and I was 14, I'm using very much my own memories. A lot of the scenes take place in Avenham Park. And when I started writing the novel, the park was very, very similar to how it had been in the late 90s. And just as I finished my novel, I don't think the events had anything to do with each other. All the trees got a hideous disease called bleeding canker.
Oh, my God.
I don't know if any of you know Avenham Park, but it sort of spoons the River Ribble, and there are huge old trees, conker trees, all the way down, and it is, in the summer, it forms a kind of green tunnel, and it is lovely, and they've chopped them all down. And the park is utterly different, and there are no places for my characters to hide and get up to no good anymore. So it has become historical, I suppose.
Is it the park next to the Continental Pub?
It is.
Oh, it's
it
a nice park.
It is. The trees are gone.
Oh, how sad. When were they felled?
About 6 months ago.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Any other questions? Yes.
If you're writing fiction, how important is it to actually identify the place? Because I can see in some of my work that it's sort of cut and shut,
mm-hmm.
that you take bits of one place and you merge them into another place.
Yep.
Otherwise, if the place itself takes over, you're writing a travelogue.
Yep, very good point, very good question. And I think at the past I've been guilty of writing travelogue. And I think it depends. I think for every writer it's different. And I wouldn't want to impose my method on any other writer. And I often read stuff that is not so obsessed, or where the writer has not been so obsessed with getting deep into the heart of the place itself and telling the truth about the place. And that stuff can work just as well for me as a reader as stuff where the writer has done that. So a lot of my stuff just isn't as much about place as some of the other stuff. So I don't apply the same method every time I write, but very often, I suppose if an idea has come from the place itself, then I will tend to try to be true to that place. And if it hasn't, if it's not a sort of place story, then it's less important. And I'm more, much
more... identify a place, the more invitation you're given
to
come and criticise it, yep. You've got that wrong.
That's true. In which case, I suppose you do have to try hard once you've identified it. What do we think? What do you think, Claire?
Yeah, I agree. You've got to... If you identify a place, you are restricting yourself and making things harder for yourself. I think there is a difference between a travelogue and a novel, though. I mean, you're always going to have the character in the novel, rather. You know, a novel wouldn't be a travelogue. It would have failed if it was a travelogue. I think
that's what Gentleman's suggesting, and certainly some of my early stuff, I feel, didn't necessarily succeed. I look back on it now and I think that, yeah, that's a bit too much like travelogue because it was just dependent too much on place, I think. Mm. What do you think, Jen?
I don't mind too much. Perhaps it's very naive of me, but I'm sure that someone will come up to me at some point and say, this shopping centre isn't here or this street isn't here, and I can say, yeah, I made that bit up. For me, that doesn't stop me being able to say I am writing about Fleetwood, I'm writing about Preston, because I think that's the difference between evoking a place and necessarily describing it. It feels okay to me to lie.
Do you need to give it a real name?
I suppose I don't, but I do. I don't need to, but I choose to, I like to. Part of it is, I suppose... maybe it's a little bit of arrogance on my part. I like it that there aren't any other books set in Fleetwood.
Is this the first one? First Fleetwood novel?
There's a film called Frozen that's set in Fleetwood, and I believe that there's a horror novel set in Fleetwood too, but I only recently found out about that and I haven't read it yet.
Right.
But no, I do. I quite like that. It makes me feel special.
I don't think that means we've got to stop immediately, does it, that signal? Anyone there? I mean, it is... It is time. Has anyone got a final question? No final question. And the thing is, yes, final question. And maybe two, yes.
I have a question for Jen. I just wanted to know whether you write about the Northwest because you happen to live here now. If you moved, would you write about the place that you moved to, or is it because it's your home and it's important to you to write about it because it's where you're from?
Yeah, it's because I've lived other places briefly. I was born in Preston, and I haven't written about any of the places that I've lived apart from the Northwest. It's because it's where I'm from. It's because it's important to me, and because a lot of my writing is rooted in autobiography in some way, that the events perhaps have not happened to me, but the feelings and the emotions in the books have. And memory is important to me. I like to use my own memories of places. And I suppose, again, like I want to... I think James Joyce said that when he was writing Dubliners, he wanted to give Dublin to the world. And perhaps less excitingly, I'd like to give Trolley to the world.
We had another question here.
My question is more about the people in those places that you write about. For example, I'm Bulgarian, and the last book that I read was by a Bulgarian author who wrote about it was set in Spain in the Civil War, and the main character was Spanish monks, and the other main character was an English woman. And I thought it was very interesting to hear a Bulgarian describing an English woman, and sometimes drawing conclusions about the English culture and things like that. Mm-hmm. So when you write novels about places that are not here, and you have to describe people that are not English, how do you feel about that?
I find it an exciting challenge. I mean, like I said earlier, I wrote that novel called Antwerp, and I've written a story called Rotterdam, and for both those pieces of writing, it was important to me to go there and meet Antwerpers and Rotterdammers and get to know them and hope that I... represented them faithfully on the page. You've probably had to deal with this as well, Claire.
Yeah, it's an opportunity to pass comment. I think, you know, can on the odd occasions so I've got English people, I can pass comment on the English, so it's sort of liberating, really.
So you're asking about English people,
but from the point of view of a German or a Welsh person, sort of like that.
And Jen would probably say that people from Chorley are like people from a different race compared to people from Preston. Is that fair?
Possibly not in writing.
Okay. Right. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for being such a lovely audience. I think we have books for sale at the near the exit, if anyone's interested. Obviously, we will be happy to sign those, and I'd like to thank Claire, and I'd like to thank Jen, and I'd like to thank the organisers, and thank you all again for coming.